Atchison, Topeka, and the Santa Fe.
Atchison, Topeka, and the Santa Fe. Ooh, ooh, ooh.
You're in tune to Women's Focus. I'm Taya Jay. In the studio, I have with me Carolyn Myers, author of the book Diary of a Waitress, The Not-So-Glamorous Life of a Harvey Girl. And before I give Carolyn an introduction, she has a little treat prepared for you, so I'm going to turn the mic over to Carolyn.
Well, thank you. It's very nice to be here. I'm going to continue the introductions with the introductions of three of the characters in the book. And one of them, the first one, is Kitty Evans, and she narrates the entire novel. With her at the boot camp that is run for beginning Harvey girls is Cordelia, who is a flapper from Philadelphia, and Emmy, who is a farm girl. And these are girls from very different backgrounds who are arriving in Emporia, Kansas, to begin their training. And now they're going to find out how very unglamorous this whole business is. And so, there's lots more, Cordelia said, and banged the wardrobe door shut. She's referring to the rules. This place is as strict as my boarding school, maybe even worse. And I suggested we try on our uniforms. I like the idea of wearing a uniform because it makes everything seem more official. Cordelia says it's just another reminder of boarding school, which was not her favorite place. Emmy went down the hall to examine herself in the full-length mirror outside the bathroom. She came back grinning and spun around for us to admire. This is the first dress I've ever had that Mam didn't make for me. Most of my clothes were made out of remnants from the dry goods store, except from a church dress. And that's a real bathroom, too. Cordelia raised one eyebrow, and Emmy, looking embarrassed, explained, I'm used to an outhouse and bathing in a washtub in the kitchen on Saturday nights. I took my turn at the mirror down the hall and liked what I saw. The black dress came almost to my ankles, with long sleeves buttoned at the wrist, a white collar starched stiff as cardboard, and a little black bow tie. A white bibbed apron, nearly as long as the dress, wrapped around a button in the back. And after years of having my straight brown hair in plaits, I was happy when Mother decided I was old enough to wear it in an updo. I'd never have the nerve to bob my hair like Cordelia's. I smiled at myself in the mirror, and a Harvey girl smiled back. Cordelia was fussing with her apron. Will you look how long this uniform is, and who ever heard of wearing an outfit like this in summer? We'll roast alive. She grumbled that she might just look for somebody to turn up the hem for her, maybe an inch at first, and then more later on when they realize how much better it looks. I reminded her what Beatrice, the house mother, said. 8 inches from the floor. No more, no less. What you going to do, measure? Cordelia asked scornfully. We changed back to our traveling clothes and went downstairs. The long hoot of a whistle signaled the approach of the 1120 eastbound train. The conductor had telegraphed ahead with information on how many to expect in the dining room and the lunchroom next to it. 3 minutes, the manager called out. A thin man with thinning hair and an even thinner mustache, Mr. Schaefer stalked through the dining room, pointing out a little smear here, a stray crumb there. Stickler for detail, as Beatrice said, and the waitresses rushed to fix things. The busboy trotted out to greet the train and sounded a brass gong with a mallet as the passengers climbed out. The crowd surged in. The manager directed them to their seats, and the waitresses moved confidently among the diners, briskly taking orders and pouring drinks. 15 minutes after they were seated, the diners were enjoying their main course, and a relaxed-looking and smiling Mr. Schaefer was strolling among the tables. At 22 minutes, the desserts were being served. 8 minutes later, the passengers laid aside their linen napkins and settled their bills, and when the whistle blew, they were ready to board. It had all been accomplished in 30 minutes, the exact time allowed for the locomotive to take on coal and water.
Thank you, Carolyn Myers, for reading a segment from your book, Diary of a Waitress, The Not-So-Glamorous Life of a Harvey Girl. Carolyn is the author of a series of 60-plus young adult novels. She is local here in Albuquerque. The content of her books is historic fiction.
Right.
Written for young adults, correct?
Right.
This specific book, Diary of a Waitress, is about the Harvey girls. I'm wondering, for anyone who doesn't know about the Harvey girls, if you can tell us a little bit about who they were and why they are important to women.
They're important to women. They're important to New Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
They're important to the whole western part of the United States. Back in the 1890s, an Englishman named Fred Harvey decided that there needed to be a better way of feeding passengers on the railroad lines that were being built and extended from Chicago on through St. Louis and out to the West Coast. And he decided that he would open a really spiffy kind of restaurant and hire young women after he found out the hard way, first of all, that the men weren't working out too well. They tended to get drunk on Saturday nights and not be such good waiters. But he could hire young women and give them a safe place to live, train them to a fairly well, and have an educated, pleasant workforce, and get this very efficient system set up. Over the years, and it went on for about 60 years until changes in transportation and how people spent their leisure, 100,000 young women, mostly from the Middle West, but, the odd one from Philadelphia or somewhere else, 100,000 of them became Harvey girls. And they would be shipped off to various Harvey houses along the Santa Fe Railroad. Many of them then stayed where they were assigned, married local men, ranchers or other railroad men or local professional people, and stayed and helped to populate the West and also to civilize it.
And why is it that you selected the Harvey girls as a topic for this book?
I stumbled on the idea the way I stumble on most writing ideas. Something comes to me as like something like pollen in the air or cat fur or something.
Uh-huh.
It just gets into my system.
And you have a creative sneeze.
Yeah. Right.
I know some of your work, the topics of your books are international. This story specifically is very local. Was it different to work on a story that is quite literally outside your front door?
Oh, that was fun. Yeah. The travel was not quite as exotic. I mean, I loved going to Austria to write about Mozart, for example, and Mozart's sister. But here I just looked out my window, and there's the rail runner across the street. There is what was once the site of a Harvey house, one of the most popular in the country, that is now a bus station and railroad station.
And you've met some of the Harvey women who are living here in Albuquerque. Tell us a little bit about that experience.
Well, I was working on the book and working with Katrina Park, who has developed a wonderful documentary, Opportunity Bound, about the Harvey girls. And we decided we were going to have a showing of the film in Albuquerque. And wouldn't it be fun if we could find some former Harvey girls? Surely there are some still around. Well, an article got published in the Albuquerque Journal. And all of a sudden, out of the woodwork, come all these fascinating women in their 90s.
Wow.
So excited that somebody's paying attention to them, recognizing them, and making a fuss over them. And we did. And had a great time with them. And, Katrina recorded their stories. And so the archive continues to build and probably will for some time.
Incredible. Now, you mentioned Katrina Parks, who unfortunately could not join us today. I believe she's on a plane coming back from Laos almost
yes,
as we speak.
Yes, yes. I try not to think too much about that.
I understand. However, you and Katrina have worked in very close partnership for several years.
Yes.
Tell us how you first met.
I was doing my research for this book, and I wanted to see this film. And I discovered that it was being shown in Belen at the library down there. And I thought, well, this would be an easy thing. I'll go down and see this film. And you had to sign up for it because crowds turn out when they hear that there's going to be a showing of something about the Harvey girls. And I went down, and there's Katrina and Stephen Fried and a couple of the people who had worked on the film. And The film was wonderful. I enjoyed it. I've seen it several times now, and I always enjoy seeing it again. And then there's the Q&A afterwards for the panel, and somebody said, why aren't you doing this in Albuquerque? Why aren't we having a premiere in Albuquerque? And at this point, I had, before the film started, gone to introduce myself to Katrina and tell her about the research I was doing. And she said, well, I've just been talking to Carolyn Meyer, and I got the impression that she might be interested in organizing this. I, what? Did I raise my hand? Did I really volunteer? Then I thought, how hard can that be? Famous last words.
Of course.
Yeah. I didn't know what I was in for. It was so much fun, and it was so much work, and it was very successful.
So tell us a little bit about that film screening. I know it was at the Chemo in downtown Albuquerque. What were your expectations for the screening, and what were the results? How did it end up?
Well, I'm not an event organizer. I sit at my computer and write novels. You know, I don't do this kind of thing. So I had no idea what I was doing. And the first thing was to get the Chemo, to get the library and the city to fund the thing, because there were licensing issues and all the stuff you have to go through. And then I thought, well, we need to find some Harvey Girls. So I knew someone who worked at the Journal, and I got the article in the paper, and the Harvey Girls started arriving. And then I thought, well, we need to have more things going on for this, and maybe we can get the Artichoke to put on a tea in the style of the old Alvarado. Alvarado, that's it, not El Dorado. Ah, finally, a little late.
We knew it would come eventually.
It kicked in there. And then trying to get publicity for it, you know, get the word out. And I talked to Larry Parker, who's the manager at the Chemo. And I said, you know, how many people do you think we can expect on a Saturday afternoon in November? And he said, oh, you're going to get an older crowd, and you know, maybe 250.
And how many people can the Chemo Theater house?
650.
650.
But he said, we'll just have everybody sit up front, and maybe some go into the back, you know, the back part of the orchestra. We don't need the balcony for this, but it's there. Well, 650 people showed up, plus 200 who could not get in.
Incredible.
And some of my neighbors went, and they couldn't get in. Friends of mine couldn't get in. And they reported that there were fisticuffs to break out. That's apocryphal. I don't know if that really happened. But I do know that there were a lot of very disappointed people who then began calling Larry and saying, when are you going to show it again?
So,
you know, the next day I'm prostrate, just unable to move after all of this. And Larry called and said, Carolyn, when are you going to do it again? Oh, gee, okay. So we worked on doing it again in May. The governor declared it Harvey Girls Day. The mayor, I have a big certificate from the mayor declaring it Harvey Girl Day. And that's when all these Harvey girls then started coming out. And Katrina had her crew here and interviewed them, and is building this ongoing archive of interviews. Fascinating.
Just incredible.
Yeah.
So Katrina is a documentary filmmaker. Can you tell us a little more, Carolyn, about Katrina's work?
Well, she is a graduate of UNM. And she was an art student at UNM. And at some point, she was working with Judy Chicago, the artist in Belen, who had, you know, Judy Chicago owned bought an old hotel there, and that became her studio. And Katrina was down there working with her. And Judy Chicago said, you know, here's a subject for you. If you're interested at all in documentary filmmaking, here's something I think you would find interesting. Well, I think for the next 10 years, that became Katrina's life, of figuring out how to do this, setting up the interviews, putting the thing together, getting everything edited, getting a narrator for it. There's a lot involved in filmmaking. I watch in fascination as these people work. It's so different from what I do.
Very different, but a similar idea of looking through historical records, referencing stories, referencing old narratives, both written and oral, and turning that into a new form.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So Katrina and Carolyn will be doing a presentation entitled The Harvey Girls, Opportunity Bound, in celebration of Women and Creativity Month, which is March, at 516 Arts on Thursday, March 10th at 6 p.m. Women and Creativity is a time to celebrate women who are writers, documentary filmmakers, artists of any kind. I'm wondering, Carolyn, if you can tell us, what is the most important thing about being a creative woman?
Ooh, my. I'm thinking of Virginia Woolf and, you know, needing a room of her own. A room that means more to me, it always meant finding the time to do it. And I think this is an issue, particularly for creative women, because there are so many other demands on their lives. And that, I know that was certainly an issue for me when I was just starting out many years ago.
And tell us how you just got started writing.
Well, it was all, what I always wanted to do from the time I was a small child. And my father was a storyteller, and he told me my bedtime stories, and I thought I could improve on them. I rewrote his bunny stories somehow or other. And I remember the first thing I wrote when I was about 8 years old was a romance novel about Humpy the Caterpillar and Gladys the Snail.
And what was the plot?
Well, it was a mixed marriage. I mean, obviously.
Social controversy.
Exactly. And I think my mother threw it out, which is very sad, but that is no longer extant. But by the time I was in college, I was an English major, and I still had this dream of becoming a writer. But writing, like I think any of the arts, there is no roadmap. If you're going to be a dentist, you know that you have to take certain science courses, and you're going to go to dental school, and you're going to have to practice. And it's a straight line. There is no roadmap for becoming an artist of any kind. You try and fail and try again. In writing, I speak mostly about that. Rejection is the norm. And you have to develop a thick skin to be able to survive the rejection, but not too thick that you can't accept criticism and learn what you need to do better. And so it's an ongoing process. It's not even, it's not straight line, it's all over the place. And it can be very, very frustrating and extremely rewarding when it works.
And in the midst of that frustration, what do you tell yourself to keep yourself moving forward?
To keep moving forward.
Yeah, quite simply.
Yes. I hear from kids a lot. And usually they're fan letters, but often it's, will you please help me finish my homework assignment? It's due tomorrow. But one of the questions that I get a lot from kids and people, young people are just starting out wanting to be writers, is how do you deal with writer's block? Well, I don't quite believe there's writer's block. I mean, you just keep doing it. And if it means you start over every day and sit there and write a few paragraphs and you know it's garbage, you throw it out and start over again. And sooner or later, that toxic thing in your brain will go away, and your discipline by then, you hope you have the discipline by then, will carry you through. So I'm unsympathetic, which usually annoys people who think that I'm going to have some magical words to say and it will all go away and we'll all dance and sing and write beautiful poetry. And it doesn't work that way as far as I can tell.
And would you say practicing every day is
crucial?
Oh,
yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yes. So I was reading the 516 description of your upcoming talk with Katrina, and they mentioned a few key words that really stood out to me. One being stake your claim and the other shape local workforce. I'm curious how you feel you have staked your claim and shaped the local workforce here in Albuquerque.
Oh, goodness. Stake the claim. I found the area of writing that I loved, that I felt I was good at, and sometimes is also even marketable, sometimes not. And that's cyclical. That comes and goes. But that's my area of creativity. And when that works in collaboration with other people, that's when it's real. Somebody like Katrina, that's when it's really, I think, most successful, most rewarding. As to how this shapes the local workforce, I don't know that I can speak to that. I'm not involved in a business that is centered in Albuquerque or in New Mexico. The people I work with are all in New York, and so I'm very New York oriented, and that's so that doesn't translate very well to the local scene. Can't help you on that one.
It seems to me that in your novels, your characters always have a personal journey, or there is a coming-of-age element. You're mm-hmm. writing for young adults. Your subjects, your characters, your protagonists are usually young individuals coming of age. Do the journeys your characters take reflect your own process and your own journey as a writer and as a woman?
I think they probably do. My starting point with my subjects, whether it's the Harvey girls or Cleopatra or Queen Elizabeth or any of the long list of usually women, but there was one man, Charlie Darwin. Notice I'm familiar terms with him. I call him Charlie.
You do.
But, but I'm interested in who these women were before they were Queen Elizabeth, before she was crowned, Cleopatra, before she became Pharaoh, Charles Darwin, before he was the guy with a long beard, you know, and who they were as young people and what their formation was, and what, in each case, they all had some kind of personal struggle, something that was impeding them from doing what it was that they eventually succeeded in doing, even if they lost their head somewhere at the end, as most of those queens seem to do. I was listening to the opera on the way over here this afternoon, and it was about Mary, Queen of Scots, and I had written a novel about her, and listening to them talk talking about the opera, you know, how her rivalry with her cousin Elizabeth and how all that played out, but and it ended very badly, of course, for Mary Queen of Scots. But many times they at least got partway to what they were destined to do, or felt that they were destined to do, and how that was overcome. And I think that reflects the journey of many women. I was about to say all, but maybe not. Maybe that's an overgeneralization. But many women, women like you, women like me, who have to struggle to find how do you get where you're going? And what are you going to have to deal with along the way?
What are some of the challenges in writing young adult work in this day and age, in the digital age, in the age of Stephenie Meyer, who I know you share a last name with?
Oh, yes. Yes, you would bring that up, wouldn't you? Yes. Stephenie and I've never met the woman. She and I do share the same last name. We're not relatives of any kind. But when I've gone into schools to do school visits in middle schools, which I've done quite a bit, and some girl or some kid asks me, "Are you Stephanie's mother?" That drives me insane. I have to be polite. I can't say what I'm thinking, which is not always complimentary to the other Meyer. But when I'm calling my agent in New York, Stephenie Meyer and I have the same New York agent, business manager. Can
no.
you believe that?
Do you really?
Yes, yes. So when I call and I say, well, it's the other Meyer girl on the phone, the one who's not paying for your penthouse, you know. so that's, the challenges are the changing styles. I mean, it's almost like, you know, working in the fashion industry. And it has been difficult because young readers today are more interested. They love dystopias, the Hunger Games, for example. And I've read one of the Hunger Games. I got a little tired of teenagers killing other teenagers, but they're very engrossing stories, and young readers really like them. And they get a series going of these, and you know the Katniss goes on and on, you know, or the characters in the Twilight series. And The Fault in Our Stars. I read the book and saw the movie, and I, you know, he's a great storyteller. He's a very good writer. But that's the fashion now. And historical fiction comes and goes. There was a time when it was extremely popular, and writers were winning the Newbery for their, you know, their books with historical historical backgrounds. And then it kind of goes away. And of course, publishers are concerned about the bottom line, as they have to be. But that has become more marked. All the self-publishing and online publishing is a phenomenon that's really hard to, you certainly can't dismiss it. And it has affected the whole book industry, which is, I think, one of the reasons now that publishers are more conservative and want to put all their emphasis on one type that is going to sell really well. It's hard for writers to survive in this atmosphere.
And if people are interested in purchasing your book, where can they do that? And just to remind you, we can't mention prices on air, but we can mention bookstores and online bookstores.
Bookworks.
Bookworks.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Local.
For sure. Yes.
Great. It's also available at the local libraries, which is where I checked out a copy.
Yes, that's good.
To find out more about Carolyn's books for young adults or adults who are young in spirit, you can visit Carolyn's website, where she has perhaps the most endearing photo of her young self at www.readcarolyn.com. And again, don't miss Carolyn and Katrina's talk on March 10th at 6 p.m., That talk will be held in honor of Women and Creativity at 516 Arts, located at 516 Central Avenue Southwest, right here in Albuquerque. For more information about the event, you can visit 516arts.org and go to their events page. And for information about Katrina Parks, the documentary filmmaker we mentioned, or to watch some of her interviews with the now Harvey Women, you can visit her website at assertionfilms.com. That's A-S-S-E-R-T-I-O-N films, all one word, .com. Carolyn, thank you so much for joining us and for sharing your wisdom, specifically about how to be a woman and how to be a creative woman.
Thank you, Taya.
Have a good day.
Thank you.